Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Garden State of Hockey podcast. We are back after what can only be described as an incredibly disappointing week for the New Jersey Devils, but it didn't start off that way, as our last episode launched the day of something major for the franchise that we are still optimistic is going to be a good thing in the long run. So to help us break down everything that happened this week in the Garden State, at least from a hockey perspective, I have John Fisher with me. Hello, John.
Hello, Dan.
It's been a tough one, but let's start off with the more positive side of things. As that Tuesday that we launched our last episode, the Devils announced a major extension for the big deal as he received the big deal. He extends in New Jersey for another 8 years, $64 million. So the Devils bank on potential, as does Hughes himself. And also, you know, it's kind of a strange contract. It's not one you see where a team banks on that much potential. It's something that usually there's a little bit of production either in the regular season or playoffs to go with something like that. But the Devils have seen enough. They're very analytically minded, and they think that eventually this contract will end up being worth it for both sides. So, John, what say you about the big deal's big deal?
Well, I was very happy to see the news. It was announced literally the afternoon of Jack Hughes' return to the ice, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And spoiler alert, it didn't go well. But, you know, the big trend, what you see across the league is when you look at the big stars like Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Evgeny Malkin to a degree, that you see these guys playing way above their contracts, like, you know, well, much more value, to the point where you have hockey media stands who are otherwise, you know, fairly liberal minded and then turn around and going, they're not getting paid enough. Mm-hmm. They need to be paid hundreds of millions of dollars. They need that Ben Simmons money. That's a name that probably is putting a chill in the spines of all the Josh Harris and David Blitzers of the world.
I was just going to say, very specific name chosen there.
Yes. But that being said, it's easily the biggest contract on the New Jersey Devils. It's literally just $1 million more than Dougie Hamilton's $63 million contract. So if you were ever concerned if Harris and Blitzer are spending money on the team, well, here's another piece of evidence that, yes, they are.
Isn't it still less than Subban?
The cap hit is, yes.
Okay.
Because it's eight by eight. Mm-hmm. And it's also worth noting that Subban's contract was provided after his ELC year. In fact, Subban is a perfect example of what the Devils avoided in this case. Because mm-hmm. In Subban's case, if you go over quickly to Cap Friendly, after his ELC year, he got signed to a $5.75 million bridge contract for two seasons. And of course, he won the Norris mm-hmm. in the middle of that bridge deal. So Montreal paid out the nose as a result, because, hey, he's got the Norris trophy. He's one of your top players. So you give him $8 by $72 million. And that is a contract that the Devils and Nashville, to a degree, have paid out handsomely for, mm-hmm. As his base salary actually went up to $9 million and even $10 million. Now it's down to $2 million with a $6 million bonus. So, I mean, Subban's eating well, Dan. he's not slumming it in Patterson or, you know, Ridgefield Park or Weehawken or even Wayne. Like, you know, he can hang out in Alpine. He's got Alpine money, Dan.
Yeah. But
more seriously, is that that's a situation you want to avoid, where you say, you haven't really proven anything yet. You do the bridge deal, and then the guy goes off in such a ridiculous direction that you end up paying through the nose later, and then you're basically paying for past production, which is always something you want to try to avoid. So to a degree, yeah, they're betting on potential, but if you're going to bet on anybody's potential on this team, it's Jack Hughes. Mm-hmm. He's the guy you want to bet the money on. And the fact that he's locked up through his entire 20s, you're going to get the best years out of Jack Hughes. You have secured that whatever Jack Hughes is going to give to this game of hockey, he's going to do the vast majority of the good stuff as a New Jersey Devil. So credit to the Devils for getting it done, rather than waiting to see if he's going to go off in the final 62 or so games of his season. And credit to Jack Hughes and his agent for being willing to make this happen, because I could have foreseen the agent saying, no, let's see if you're going to have that breakout year first, and then we'll talk money.
Yeah. And it's something that It's interesting. Jack Hughes is a very difficult player to make comparisons for just because of the weird trajectory of his career so far, where the advanced numbers are very elite and the counting stats are not at all. The numbers just haven't reached that because of, one thing or another, shooting percentages in general as a whole that the Devils have had in his time in New Jersey have been abysmal. So you'd think with some players that can put the puck in the net, the production should go up, but we'll see how that happens for him, throughout the rest of this season and moving on, because he's here for a while now, and that's a good feeling. And we thought, that day they announced the contract, he's back in the lineup. Apparently, he's been ready for a while. Everyone's feeling hyped up, and it did not go well for the Devils. In fact, they have not won a game since his return to the lineup. And in no small part because for a couple of, well, for a lot of moments in that time, he's been playing not in his natural center position. It's been something that they've tried to ease him back in, not have him take faceoffs because, I don't know, for the sake of preserving the shoulder maybe, but it is not working. It's not going well.
And yeah, they lined him up at wing for the game in against San Jose to end the month and the game in Minnesota, which doesn't make a lot of sense because if you watch hockey these days, this isn't, like those tabletop games where everybody's on a line per se. They only go up and down in some area. Forwards, if you look at coaching drills, they don't call them left wing, center, or right wing. They just say forward one, forward two, forward three. Once the faceoff happens, we forget about position and people will flow wherever needed. So it wasn't like Jack Hughes was not coming down the middle of the ice, and it wasn't like he wasn't going into the quote unquote dirty areas to make things happen. But it was a bizarre move, and it didn't work out. It didn't work out for Jack Hughes. It didn't work out for Nico Hischier on night one, and it didn't work out for Dawson Mercer in night two. So, it's one of those things that I think the coaching staff overthought themselves into. And, I don't want to blame Jack Hughes or give him a lot of guff. I know he just signed a big extension and he is the big deal, but the guy coming back from injury is not the guy you point the finger at for the last three losses that we're about to discuss. I do want to make one other side point about Jack Hughes's contract before we go into those games, partially to delay talking about those games, because they were about as fun as, getting punched in the face to watch. If you're concerned about the cap hit being, $8 million, I got some bad news for you. That's kind of the going rate for a player of Jack Hughes's caliber, even with the counting stats, Dan, because a good comparable is Brady Tkachuk. And I understand that, by the people who don't like Jack Hughes or make snide comments about him, they prefer a guy like Brady Tkachuk because he's big, Dan. He's tough. He's a real man, Dan. He's gritty. He has a bizarrely annoying 8.205 cap hit for the next 7 years. And this is a guy who's never topped more than 45 points, which was his rookie season counting numbers total. Yeah, he put up 36 points in the 56-game season, so maybe he could have surpassed that. But this is a guy who's never scored more than 22 goals in a season, and he got this fat contract. So if you're looking at Jack Hughes's or even Nico Hischier's counting numbers and going, that they're not producing enough for that type of money, I got some bad news for you, everybody. There are guys who are producing around that same area making more on average than Hughes or Heischer. So
Well,
welcome to the market, everybody.
so even if they're not producing at, the counting stats you'd want to see at that number, even if they start doing that by year three, it's already worth it. You know what I mean? It's something that they're here for a while. It doesn't have to happen right away.
There is always going to be a sense of when you buy out somebody's RFA years, as they call them, and buy out a couple of their first UFA years, their UFA eligibility years, you are betting on potential. You're making a bet that I'm willing to pay more now, so this way they're going to be worth more later, rather than what you see in free agency every summer, where guys are getting stupid contracts based on what they did in the past, knowing full well they're not likely going to repeat it ever again in their careers.
All
Anyway,
right.
let's talk about these awful games,
We've
man.
reached the inevitability. And I just want to point out, I think the Devils have a total of what, 2 wins versus the Western Conference this year? I think they just beat Seattle and they beat San Jose in a shootout. And that was the only 2 wins they have against any Western Conference team this year.
I am quickly checking this, and I regret to point to the people who, oh no, they beat Chicago.
Oh, they do. Yeah, in game one,
Opening
they beat
night.
Chicago.
So
That's right. So that's
three.
three
Take
grand total
that,
wins against the Western Conference. They have been abysmal against them. It's not just that.
Yes.
it's not just the fact that they have three wins. It's that in almost every game against Western Conference teams, they have looked atrocious. They have just been not ready to play these teams. And maybe some part of that has to do with, the fact that they saw certain opponents much more last year, but that still doesn't explain why they cannot get ready for these games. And I would say that was the case in all three of these games. It's a complete dud of a week for the Devils.
Yeah, I would argue that the first period against San Jose was their best first period of all of the entire week, which is not saying much. And it wasn't that bad of a period. The Devils were skating well. The pace of play was good. Yeah, they were down a goal, but this is hockey. Being down a goal is not a cause for concern.
Yeah.
You know, you're down
especially because we've seen this team come back a bunch of times in the third period, but for some reason, the first periods have been absolutely awful.
All year long, they've been awful. Yeah, and with the exception of the Sunday game, last Sunday's game against Philadelphia, among other
The Florida exceptions. First period.
Or the Florida first period, the Islanders game the week prior to that. But yeah, you have to kind of sift through the games to find the rare examples of
the fact that we can point out specific ones is an indicator.
Right. So the problem with the San Jose game, Dan, was really the second period.
Yeah.
This team literally, I don't know how, like, I want to thank one of the people who matter, Jesse, one of our readers. He invited me to sit in row three in the club section for that game, Dan.
Nice.
So I got an up close look in that second period, Dan, of the Sharks just bullying the Devils. Ugh. And when I say bully, I'm not talking, they size them up and they hit them hard and they push those little weak sauce European style skill players around. You know, I'm a tough guy who's been a fan since 82. And that's how hockey still got to be played like they did in 1982. No. The Sharks body them by playing the game of hockey way better than them. Mm-hmm. Like they could complete passes. They could complete three passes in a row. The Sharks were able to keep pucks in play. The Sharks were able to make line changes effectively. You know, their players were able to make to expose the Devils on their weak side. And this is actually a flaw in their system, Dan, how they do business on defense, both on the power penalty kill and both and 5-on-5 hockey, where the Devils love to overload on the puck side, especially in the corners, try to win those puck battles, which, similar to a blitz in football, if you hit it, if you get it in there and force a bad pass or you get to the quarterback, good job. But if you don't get it, you are at risk of a lot of pain. And three times in that period, the Devils, you know, were beaten weak side. The third of the three goals was actually a really amazing pass through two Devils, through Ty Smith and I want to say Dougie Hamilton even. But the other two, the first two were basically the same type of goal. Devils in the left corner. They don't win the puck. Puck squirts out to a wide open Shark to the right of the slot. And, you know, he's got Blackwood beaten dead to rights. And ultimately, the Devils went down as much as 4-0 in that game. And amazingly, Dan, the Devils played worse as the period went on. Like Andreas Johnsson turned into a turnover machine. Jesper Bratt, who has been amazing all month long, was basically, you know, back to his, you know, the form that he showed when he was a scratch that one game. Like Ryan Graves had an awful game, Dan. Awful game handling the puck.
Yeah.
It was Ben Lovejoy-esque. You know, I would go as far as to say that nobody on the Devils looked good in that second period. And again, the only exception I would grant would maybe be to Blackwood because he was hung out to dry so many times, and to Jack Hughes because the guy literally played his first game back from a very long injury. So it was bad. It was terrible. And in the third period, you see two goals scored. They're consolation goals. Empty netter. It's a 5-2 loss. And you're just wondering, well, that stunk. You disappointed the Maven. He actually flew in from Israel to attend this game, Dan. So, you know, you disappointed him. You disappointed the many people in the arena. It was a holiday feeling, and the Devils gave everybody a lump of coal.
Yeah, I mean, different holiday, but sure, that works.
Yeah, they were celebrating Jewish Heritage Night on that game.
I was gonna say
that's kind of the connection I failed to mention initially. But Maven is also working with the Hockey News now, so he's also around for business purposes. He didn't show up in a very fetching leopard print scarf with a suit
to a random Tuesday night Devil Sharks game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he was in a box too. That's how you know they prepared for it. He wasn't just hanging out in the crowd randomly one night like Uli Heimer once did in a very ugly looking sweater. Nevertheless, he is the Maven, and Uli Heimer is just Uli Heimer. So after that game, Dan, Lindy Ruff made a big deal about effort. and a lack of will and a lack of execution. And he's not wrong, Dan. Yes. He wasn't wrong. So the Devils did some suicide drills, you know, long practices, hard practices, right? You know, posted on NewJerseyDevils.com. It was, you know, good show for the press, shows to the people who matter, shows to the media that, you know, they're not happy about that loss, Dan. They're not happy about that loss. They're working them hard. Things got to change. Things got to be better. So surely, Dan, logic would dictate that these guys would be fully prepared for their next two games in Minnesota and in Winnipeg as it's a back-to-back. Dan, in your expert opinion, would you say the Devils were adequately prepared for either of these games?
Oh, no. The Devils went winless in mini-winnie for that road trip because, well, let's start off with the fact that Minnesota and Winnipeg are two good teams. Winnipeg hasn't had the best start for where they are supposed to be, but talent-wise, they are a good team. And Minnesota, again, they seem to be building on top of what they did last year.
They are leading their division.
Yeah. And they're leading their division. And so, you know, if the Devils lost those games, it's a different thing than how they lost those games in particular, because they were never really in either of those games. No. I don't know.
Briefly. Winnipeg, they were briefly in those
never mind.
Games.
The Winnipeg game was one of the weirder ones. But let's talk about Minnesota first, because, again, it was basically a carbon copy of the San Jose game without the good first period.
Correct. Like, the Devils came out and, again, they got bodied. They could not do anything to Minnesota. Minnesota basically did whatever they wanted. Kirill Kaprizov scored early. Rem Pitlick scored later to make it a 2-0 deficit, you know, not even a little over 11 minutes into the game. And, you know, the Devils just didn't really have much of a response. You got a bad power play, of course, performing badly. At least they didn't give up a shorty, Dan. At least. But, you know, Kaprizov scores again in the second, early in the second period, and you're down 3-0. And then you see a brief spark from the Devils where Ryan Graves scores his second of the season, literally less than a minute after Kaprizov's second goal of the game to make it 3-1. Tomáš Tatar finishes the drill from a great feed from Mr. Hamilton to make it 3-2. And you start thinking, okay, maybe the Devils are going to set things to right. And then Graves lets Dmitry Kulikov, not the fastest man in the world, not even definitely not the fastest Dmitry in the league. Dmitry Kulikov got behind Ryan Graves at the crease to pop in a tiny rebound, and it's now 4-2. And the dulling pain of Devils hockey sets in, where the Wild just continue to swarm and make Mr. Blackwood, you know, play out of his mind, despite the fact that he's already given up 4 goals. And it's all for naught because Ryan Hartman would score a 5th goal, you know, just to, you know, ice the game at the end regardless. But to put this in perspective, to sum up the entire game in one play, Andreas Johnsson tried to fight Ryan Hartman.
Oh, that was so weird. And Andreas Johnsson did not know the rules of fighting because they have changed since his last fight, which was never, maybe. Because he immediately took off his helmet and got an unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, penalty. Hartman even stopped and like extended his hand out. Almost like
what's
his
this
hand
guy doing?
Like to shake his hand. He's like, thanks for the free unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which he got. Like the Devils went on the penalty kill as a result of it. I mean, the only positive between this for this game, I guess you could say, is that the Devils penalty kill was perfect. But, you know, you're almost grasping at straws for you know, silver linings here. And, you know, I don't work for MSG. You don't work for MSG. I don't work for the Devils. You don't work for the Devils. So reaching for silver linings isn't exactly, you know, what I want to do for this game. This was just a terrible game. And it's surprising to me, Dan, because the week prior, on Thanksgiving Eve, the Devils hosted Minnesota, outplayed them, put up a ton of shots on them, hit the post 4 times. They could have won the game. They lost it in a shootout. So it's mystifying to me that all you did was just play the game in Minnesota. Yeah, you don't get the last change. Yeah, you're on the road. But how do you, you know, it's not like the rosters changed that dramatically, Dad.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, the Devils had Jack Hughes. Minnesota got Matt Zuccarello-Aasen back. Yes, I still remember the Aasen part of his last name that they took away from him. Maybe he doesn't want it anymore. So if that's the case, I apologize to Mr. Zuccarello. But nevertheless, it shouldn't have been this decisive. It shouldn't have been this much of a beatdown. And while the outlying numbers don't look so terrible, the run of play just showed that the Devils were just playing catch up from the very first shift. And as such, they took another decisive 5-2 loss.
I don't know. The special teams still bug me because the penalty kill has been a lot better.
It has been.
The penalty kill's been actually really, 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 really good, but that I don't know what it's going to take because they had power play opportunities in this game too, and they had nothing. They could muster nothing. And
Right.
it's so disappointing.
And they didn't muster enough at 5-on-5. So,
well, that's the problem too. What's troubling about these is that, you know, usually when we have the run of results that we're used to these last couple of years, at least there are games where the process was good and it was, you know, some breaks didn't go their way, but we can look at that and say, okay, at 5-on-5, they did a lot better. The defense was still pretty stout and they just got unlucky on a few things, couldn't finish. That's the story as old as time. But it looks like, you know, especially Ryan Graves has had a real rough run this week because maybe he's not used to the minutes he's getting. He's not had this bigger role on some of the other teams he's played on, and it's something that's catching up to him, perhaps. I don't know, because he has not been sharp at all.
No. And it's one of the big problems that we've seen all season. As you know, we're recording this on Sunday. On Monday is the big month in review for November. And you'll see that the numbers for 5-on-5, you know, defensively got a lot worse in November. So this is not a recent phenomenon. This is not just they were bad on defense in San Jose and bad on defense against Minnesota and bad on defense against Winnipeg. Don't get me wrong, they were, but I'm saying the warning signs, the issues were starting to happen throughout all of November. And I think you have a point that maybe it's not so much Graves alone is getting exposed a bit, but it's also, you know, if Siegenthaler has a bad night, that's bad news. Ty mm-hmm. Smith has been absolutely struggling all season long. Damon Severson is bizarrely good on the penalty kill, but not so good at 5-on-5. Of course, he's also playing a lot with Smith, who, again, if he's struggling, then, you know, Severson can only do so much. And Subban runs hot and cold. He's had some really, really good nights, and then he's had other nights where his biggest contribution is slew-footing a guy, which Lindy Ruff apparently said that was unacceptable, and yet the guy keeps doing it. So
I think
Lindy Ruff thinks it's somewhat unacceptable since it keeps happening.
But why does he keep – I kind of have an idea of why he keeps doing it because he can't really catch up to people anymore. But, my God, it happened again in the Winnipeg game. I'm surprised it wasn't called. Winnipeg game was a completely defense-optional game, it seems. Where the Devils
for the most part,
the option for more of the game off. Everything that went towards their net went into their net. Not only were they bad defensively, but Bernier could not stop a beach ball that game.
No,
there were some inexcusable goals from him.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pointed out that if the San Jose and the Minnesota game showed flaws with the system, this was a game where this was legitimately more of an issue of like just effort and guys just not even doing fundamental things on defense, like not sticking with your men, not picking up open men, not lifting sticks, you know, not, you know, respecting gap control, like things that a coach can only do so much. Now, I have a lot of bad things to say about the coaching staff based on these three games and what I'm seeing from the results of November as a whole. And of course, we have a lot of bad things to say about the power play. We will continue to do so. But this was a game where you can't really say the coaching alone caused this massive loss in Winnipeg. This was just a game where the Devils just, they just sucked. Like they didn't do their jobs very well. And Winnipeg, you know, less than 8 minutes into the game, they're up 3-0. Like Scheifele, Ehlers, Vesalainen, like, and even amid all of that, it's not like the Devils ran back and like put up some good shots on Connor Hellebuck. It, you know, it was just all Winnipeg hockey. Like Winnipeg was like, okay, we're just going to, this is what you're going to give us. We're now going to pound you in the face. And this is when things got weird.
It was 3 unanswered goals from Winnipeg to start the game. Then 4 unanswered back from New Jersey. And then 5 unanswered the other way for Winnipeg again.
Yeah.
I don't really understand how you have that level of momentum swing in the game. It's like the Devils were almost surprised that they were in it.
Yeah, and what's even more surprising is how it started. It started with a power play goal, Dan.
Yes.
Their first since November 14th.
Oh, my God.
And this was actually a goal from their formation. That power play goal on November 14th was just Dougie Hamilton crossing the blue line and saying, I'm just going to wing a shot past Alexander Georgiev, and surprise, surprise, it worked. But this play involved Tomas Tatar covered by two men, forcing a pass cross ice to Damon Severson through two jets, and Severson then collecting the puck and tucking it in just inside the far post. So it was a power play goal, I don't think you can repeat that type of play.
No.
Because again, you know, they did make note on the broadcast that the Jets did have the least successful penalty kill in the league. Mm-hmm. Not that the Devils power play was going to threaten them very much, but they got their one opportunity to at least break their goalless streak for several games, several weeks. So credit to that. And then late in the period, Jack Hughes, you know, crashes the net.
Mm-hmm.
So all the complaints about he's too small and he's not good enough, you know, to crash the net. You got to be a big man like Brady Tkachuk, a real young man, Dan. Well, Jack Hughes went to the net and finished the drill to make it 3-2. Less than a minute into the second period, Nico Hischier finishes the drill from a feed from Jesper Bratt. And then Ryan Graves gets a fortunate deflection, if I'm not mistaken, into the net, you know.
Yeah, they thought later. They thought Tatar might have gotten a stick on it and knocked it down, yeah. But end up being Graves' goal. And the Devils are up 4-3 at this point.
Yeah,
and you think, wow, okay. What a miracle that they've managed to come back in this game.
Four goals in Winnipeg's building against Connor Hellebuyck, one of the best goaltenders in the league, a guy who has not given up more than two goals in 11 of his last 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, getting four goals against Connor Hellebuyck is, all right, guys, this is in our favor. Let's lock it down. Did the Devils lock it down, Dan?
They did not lock it down. They opened it up, if anything.
They going back to the optional theme, it's as if the Devils just went, all right, we're winning now. Screw the defense. Let's just get out there and, you know, skate about. Let's just try. And I know Ken Danico on the broadcast made a meal out of, you know, Pavel Zaka hitting the post and how that was a big turning point. No, the big turning point was that the Devils just lost their minds in terms of covering guys and just played lazy hockey. Whether or not Zaka scored then wouldn't have changed the Jets from scoring as much as they did afterwards, because Ehlers continue to eat the Devils' lunch. Josh Morrissey got on the board to take the lead for Winnipeg. That would ultimately be your game-winning goal. Scheifele scored his second on a late power play. No thanks to Michael McLeod, who had an awful week, Dan.
Yeah,
he was took a really bad penalty. It was at this point in the second period, it was noted that, you know, Michael McLeod had more minutes at 5-on-5 than Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier, which I think is both bad coaching and at the same time speaks to how McLeod is getting picked on, because if you're taking that many extra minutes, it's probably because you can't get off the ice. And case in point, he took a penalty. Scheifele made them pay. And then in the third period, Scheifele completed his hat trick. Adam Lahr, you know, at this point, Blackwood is in the net now. A move that maybe should have been made earlier. Scheifele finishes an odd man rush. Adam Lowry, you know, tacks on another odd man rush of sorts, a makeshift one. And it's 8-4, Dan.
And the Devils in their last, I think Winnipeg is 8-0-1 against the Devils in the last 9 games, which is not cool.
No.
I don't know why they have such difficulty with this team specifically, but it does feel like every time they play Winnipeg, there is no chance they're going to win. And that's been the case for years.
And not only that, Dan, but Winnipeg went into this game struggling. You know, the talk was like, oh, Scheifele hasn't scored too many. He only had two goals this season. Well, the dude got a hat trick.
Yeah, there's nothing that can get you right like playing against the Devils.
You know, and again, you know, it's not like the Devils, you know, put themselves in this position to lose. This wasn't like the Nashville game last week or the San Jose or the Minnesota games we just talked about, where the Devils, you know, just weren't good enough and, you know, never really gave themselves much of a chance in the game. They not only tied it up, but they took a lead and scored 4 straight against Connor freaking Hellebuyck.
Mm-hmm.
And the Devils did everything they could to basically squander the game. And did so. And it's at this point, Dan, it has been noted by several Devil fans, some of the more negative people among the people who matter, but the negative people have a point here, Dan, is that over the last 10 seasons, Dan, 22 games into the season, Dan, the Devils have only had more than 30 points once. Mm-hmm. And they only had a positive goal differential once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 2017-18 when they made the playoffs. All other seasons, you can make a case that, oh, the Devils were in the mix and, you know, they were just, you know, they just needed a couple extra wins here and there. you know, just like right now, if the Devils get a couple wins, they could zoom past an also struggling Columbus, Pittsburgh, and continue to surpass an also struggling Philadelphia.
Minus the Rangers, it's been a weirdly bad week for the Metropolitan in general.
Yeah, Washington and the Rangers were the only team to have, quote unquote, won their weeks. Even Carolina had a swoon. They were actually a game away from losing their entire week, and that's Carolina Day.
And we complain, but the Islanders are on a 10-game losing streak. It's
oh yeah, certainly
not
yeah.
great.
Yeah, exactly. They literally could go a month. If they do not win tonight, they will be a month since their last game.
Wow.
Their last win, I should say. But the point is that, you know, as much as we love to sit here and say, you know, oh, the Devils, they were staying afoot because they didn't have Jack Hughes. And, you know, they got Dougie Hamilton. Dawson Mercer has emerged. Jesper Bratt's having a hot season. Andreas Johnsson's having a hot season. Nico Hischier, he may not have as many points as you'd like, but he's doing a lot of great things in the run of play. His 5-on-5 numbers are absolutely excellent. Same with Tatars, who's now scoring goals, by the way. He's maybe one of the few bright spots of these last three games, is that Tatar has found the net, or at least found the score sheet. But nevertheless, Dan, the Devils are still looking at being outside of the playoffs for a 10th straight season, you know, nine out of their last 10 seasons.
Yeah.
It's like, after all the money that Josh Harris and David Blitzer have laid out, all the moves that they've made that you and I have praised Tom Fitzgerald for, or we say we appreciate, like, whether they're big deals, like the big extension for Jack Hughes, or minor deals, like bringing in Nathan Bastian in and off of waivers, or giving Dawson Mercer a chance with the coaching staff. You know, it's like, what's it going to take to get this team over the damn hump? People are getting understandably impatient and frustrated that, you know, when is this damn rebuild going to end? You know, it can't continue on. And I got to be honest with you, Dan, with these last, you know, if we were just talking about after the San Jose game, my feeling would just be, say what you want. This is the best, you know, the Devils have looked since 2017-18. But the last two losses have pretty much undercut that dramatically. And, you know, I'm just left here sitting here going, something's got to give here. I don't know what, Dan, but something's got to change, because whatever we're seeing right now, it ain't it.
Well, from a process perspective, we'd say, you know, they've won, quote unquote, the offseason the last couple of years. And from a process perspective, we thought the Rangers were being reactionary with their moves and bringing in the tough, gritty guys. But at the end of the day, given the trajectories of the teams, it seems clear that the obvious difference is coaching. It's one Gerard Gallant versus Ruff and his staff. And I don't, you know, it's not Ruff exclusively. I think for the most part, we can look at, I don't know, Nazarene Recchi to really figure out where the Devils could have possibly lost some points here. But at the end of the day, the staff as a whole is not getting them ready to play enough times out of the week.
And I'm glad you said that, Dan, because yes, after, even though I just said the Winnipeg loss, like a lot of those goals against were not really a failure of system. But again, the fact that the Devils were just not prepared to play. And when you see that for three games in a row where they're just not giving a damn, and this is after, you know, a Nashville game where they said the same thing, where they also laid an egg, you have to really start questioning like the preparation process. You know, it's great that you're doing suicide drills after a bad loss. Cool. But it doesn't mean anything if the guys are just going to come out and get their ass beat, you know, within the first 5 minutes of the game. Even if they don't give up a goal, you can just watch the game and just go, this is going to be a long night. And that was the case in Minnesota. And with Winnipeg, it was absolutely the case because they scored twice in the first 5 minutes.
They scored three times in the first 10, John.
Yeah, exactly. Like at this point, like I understand the coaches aren't the ones on the ice to do the basic things there. But if the players who are professionals, they've been doing this for several years, you know, if they're not getting the job done, you got to question the motivations. You got to question how they're preparing themselves to get ready for these games. You got to question the lack of adjustments. You know, we've seen lots of different line changes. We've seen lots of different personnel changes on special teams, but the power play is still running that stupid 1-3-1 that's not working. We've seen a change on the penalty kill formation, which actually has been very helpful for them. So it begs the question why we don't see other changes at 5-on-5 or on the power play from a tactical standpoint. But again, it points to, you know, preparation is the bigger short-term issue. And, you know, yeah, the 5-on-5 numbers over the whole season still aren't that bad. In some ways, they're pretty good in some regards. But November saw the Devils' defense just giving up a lot of shooting attempts, a lot of shots on net, a lot of scoring chances, and a, you know, fairly high XGA, expected goals against rate. much higher than they were in October. And that just can't be explained by simply just playing some more road games and more games in general. Like, the team is just not prepared to play, and they're not prepared to do the work that they need to do off the puck. And the fact that it continues to happen, and we saw it for three straight games for the most part, really points to the fact that the coaching staff is just, you know, they're just not getting it done.
And to the people blaming the captain here, it is not his job to prepare everyone for the game. It is his job to help do that, but his job is mainly to play hockey. And so the coach's job is to prepare people for the game. It's to give strategy that actually adapts to what is working and what isn't. And that doesn't seem to be happening quickly enough. In fact, the adaptations have been bizarre, if anything, but at least they moved Hughes finally off the wing. And again, the Devils are getting a gut check here, because these next five games are very winnable. These next five games are a stretch where the Devils could seriously turn around, gain some momentum, start banking some points, get back into the swing of winning hockey. Because, again, the Minnesota-Winnipeg road trip was bad, but also those are two good teams. Yes. The stretch coming up is not the case.
No, it's I want to caution by saying it's favorable, but you do have to be careful, because that first opponent, Ottawa, one of the worst teams in hockey, are coming off a win over Carolina and an overtime win over Colorado. So, you know, if you doubt Ottawa, you know, you're in for a long night, but that's pretty much a must win at this point. And then on Wednesday night, the Devils will host Philadelphia again. The Devils took Philadelphia to school last Sunday, Dan. So Philadelphia is in a slump of their own. So it's imperative that the Devils get 2 points out of that game too, if only to just keep stay ahead of the Flyers, which they have been doing thanks to the Flyers losing. And then you got a back-to-back set, which is a little trickier, but you get home game against Nashville. That's more favorable than road game in Nashville. You get the Islanders in the UBS Arena, whom, as of this recording, have yet to win a game. I like to think that they'll win a game by then. I don't want to go into that one knowing that the Islanders are winless in like 14 and, you know, they're going up against a shaky Devils team, and you start getting the doubt starting to plant in your head going, oh no, not tonight, not tonight, tonight. In a way, I almost want the Islanders to win. They're playing Chicago, I want to say, tonight. And, you know, just get that out of the way, so this way the Devils don't have to worry about being the team that loses to the slumpiest team in the league right now. And yes, slumpiest is a word. Sure. And then after that game, the Devils will play in Philadelphia on the 14th. That's another huge divisional matchup game where the Devils could help themselves by beating down and keeping down Philadelphia. But you're absolutely right, Dan. Like, if the Devils are going to, you know, get back into the playoff picture, they've been helped in a sense that Columbus has went winless this past week as well. Pittsburgh has just won one game, and they lost in a shootout to Calgary. You know, there hasn't been a ton of movement within the division. Like, the Devils, if they could just win a couple games here and there, they're legitimately back in the wild card race. But if they don't do well in these next five games, you know, there's a better than zero chance that it's going to be the same story that we've been talking about the last three seasons, which is it's New Year's Day and the Devils are effectively out of the playoffs, which is depressing considering, as you said, the offseason moves are great. Dougie Hamilton is legitimately a number one defenseman. You know, Blackwood and Bernier actually played well in November for all intents and purposes. You know, Dawson Mercer, his line with Bratt and Johnson has been fantastic. Keisher's been doing a lot of good things. So it's not as if the Devils have nothing going for them, but the Devils have a whole bunch of issues with their depth not performing up to a competitive standard. Special teams penalty kills getting better, so I'll say that, but power play has continued to be abysmal and a hindrance. You're failing at the shootout, and your lack of motivation and preparation for games is literally costing you points. You know, imagine if the Devils didn't give up the first two or three goals in a game, Dan. Maybe they would have won a couple extra games, and we're feeling a lot more confident about their prospects going into these next five games.
Yeah, they're chasing the play for the most part, so hopefully they can stop chasing and actually play from a position of strength here. As they go into that stretch that you just mentioned, it's something that you look at those games and you say, okay, playoff teams who are playoff caliber win a majority of the games in a stretch like that. It's something that, yeah, you can have a fluky one in those five, but at the end of the day, you have to take at least three of those games. It's something that if you have aspirations to make the playoffs, you're facing opponents like that, facing opponents who are trending the way that the this set of opponents is you have to perform here. This is where the Devils really figure out what kind of team they're going to be this year. And so hopefully they're able to perform. They're able to get back on the winning side of things because they only have 2 wins in their last 10 games. So
yeah,
not a way to aspire to the playoffs, if anything. But we'll see what happens as they continue on and face some of these, I'll say more vulnerable opponents, but nothing's easy in today's NHL.
No, nothing is. But you do raise a good point, Dan, that outside of Nashville, those are three of the teams, because, of course, they play Philly twice. They're not playoff teams right now, and there's a very good chance, not a very good chance, there's almost 100% chance that Ottawa and the Islanders are not playoff teams, given where they are in the standings. And Philly is almost in a spot to join them if they don't get their act together. So, again, you hope that the Devils aren't the reason how they get their act together. So you're absolutely right, Dan. If the Devils are going to show that they are going to play competitive games in March, notice I didn't say playoffs, just competitive games in March.
Yep.
You got to get some W's out of this. You got to get some points out of this. You know, Carolina or Washington or our hated rivals, they can go at a stretch of 5 games like this and lose like 3 or 4 of them because they've banked enough points that, you know, they can afford that. The Devils are not in a position to do that. So,
well, those are also teams that are pressure. More experienced with winning continuously.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. They're higher in the standings for a reason, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, all right, let's see how they perform. Let's see if they're able to bounce back from what was their toughest week of the season so far, and hopefully they're able to turn things around and start bringing back some of the good vibes that the Jack Hughes signing brought around the organization. So with that,
he scored.
Yeah, he did score. So with that being said, thank you again for joining us. We hope that we're able to present a better week for the team in our next episode. But until then, keep watching and let's go Devils.
Go Devils.